This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 442 podcast. I'm James Brown, Editor-in-Chief, and joining me to dissect and discuss all the news that's worth publishing are two of our great featured writers, Andy Mitten and Sam Pilger. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. You know, Andy, each podcast that we do, we're going to just be looking at the biggest features in our latest edition and talking about football in general. This is the first ever 442 podcast, so God knows how it will go and where we'll go. I'm a Leeds United fan. These two are both Manchester United fans, so I feel a little bit. Well, it's probably fairly balanced, really. So the first issue that I've edited has got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on, which Andy's written. And you've written a brilliant piece, and obviously got quite a lot of stick from Leeds fans saying, "Why have you put him on?" And I was just arguing that even if you don't like Man United, it's you know a really strong in-depth piece. Can you just tell us a little bit? First of all, tell us a bit about Fergie, because I think as a non-Man United fan, that was the most fascinating, that you've spoken to about four or five, six, seven different sources. Somebody reveals that Sir Alex meets with Ole every week.
Yeah, he's not controlling Ole like a puppet. Like,
no.
I've read a couple of times. He's in the background and he's always available, but it's very informal. It might be Ollie after a game going into the main stand and going into Sir Alex's suite and saying hello to him. And Sir Alex will be with his family and they'll have a chat. And as Ollie said, why wouldn't I go to this man who can dispense so much advice, who knows his club better than anybody? And the previous managers didn't always do it. They were a little bit, they were certainly respectful, but Van Gaal said, I don't want the ghost of Ferguson hanging over me.
Yeah.
Mourinho made more efforts to get him back involved at Manchester United. He invited him down to the training ground, and that was the first time he'd been back to the training ground. David Moyes had a good relationship with him at the start, but pretty early on in Moyes' time there, senior players were contacting Fergie and saying, can we speak to you? And he was saying, no, Moyes is in charge now. I don't care. I'm coming round to your house. We've got big problems here. I'm coming to see you.
And which players would I?
I'm not going to say because okay. They told me in confidence, but they went.
Have they left them?
Yeah, okay. A couple of them have. And, you know, Fergie can't not open the door to someone who's played 400 times to them. And that showed how.
There's people now looking on Google.
Oh, they won't find it. So why not use Fergie? He's there, he's in great health, but Ollie is very much his own man. He learned a lot under Sir Alex, and he's got good coaches around him, and he sees it as a team effort. I mean, I started the piece by saying when he got awarded the Manager of the Month for January, it was put to him, you've won it. He said, no, I've not. Our team have won it. And the Premier League wanted pictures of Ollie with the trophy, which isn't unreasonable. And he said, no, I want pictures of my whole coaching team here. So he sees it as a team effort. But since he signed the contract permanently, United are quite keen for it to be known that he's the man. He's the manager. He's the one who has to take responsibility. The buck stops with him. And he can have all these people around him guiding him and be good foils to him. Mike Phelan, for example, can push back against the commercial demands of the club.
That was in the piece you mentioned that Mike Phelan was like a sort of buffer between the commercial expectations. Is that what he did for Ferguson as well? He was, I mean, it's almost like executive role, isn't it, rather than a coaching role?
Yeah, I mean, he's a football coach first and foremost. He's a football man. He was a good footballer. He had a decent career in the top level. But maybe the commercial department might go to him rather than Fergie and say, we've got this 20-day tour of Asia and we want you to be doing commercial work on 24 days here. And Mike Phelan might say, well, that's absolutely impossible. So he would push right back from that and say, no, 9 days and 2 hours a day. And then he would find a happy medium with Sir Alex, because the commercial work is important. A large chunk of their pay salaries comes from that. So United have been very successful in attracting sponsors around the world, and they have to go and glad hand with the sponsors. They can send ambassadors all they like, but if sponsors are paying tens of millions of pounds, they want to speak to the main people.
It seems pretty smart the way he's assembled people who were available. So, you know, bringing Michael Carrick very close to the centre of the management team, bringing Phelan back, I guess, from, I don't know what he was doing, he'd had an unsuccessful spell at Hull, and using people like, obviously, Alex Ferguson, who was his mentor as a manager and player. Is that something that was sort of unexpected of him?
I don't think anyone expected Ole Gunnar to get the job. When people were writing at the start of this season, as things got worse and worse under Mourinho, the names coming forward were Zidane, Pochettino. And Pochettino, I understood, was willing to join Manchester United this summer. He wasn't going to walk out on Tottenham pre-season. Of course, he'll never say that now. And you have flavours of the month, and fans start getting swayed by flavours of the month. I remember it was Sven-Goran Eriksson when Sir Alex was going to step down before changing his mind. But Ollie's right to make and bring these people involved, because between him, Mike Phelan and Michael Carrick, there's over 45 years of experience in the club there. And these things are important. But Ollie's not been at the club for a while. He's gone back in. He asks questions every day. Why are we doing this? Why don't we do this anymore? Why are we doing it that way? And staff were pretty stunned, because he was only came in as a caretaker manager for five months. And yet he acted right from the start like somebody who wanted to be there for much longer. I just think it's common sense to get people who know the club well, who the players like, who the players trust, because a lot of that was lost when Sir Alex stepped down. And David Moyes brought his own people in.
I think that was a mistake, wasn't it? That he didn't.
Well, it happens in football. Every manager brings their own players in. And you can argue rightly and wrongly.
They say in the great books, the big thought on power is never follow the most powerful person. So also, Moyes, I think, was a romantic choice by Ferguson. Sam, are you happy the way it's worked out? It's taken three managers to get someone that the fans, you get a sense, will be behind for quite a long time.
Well, I think they'll be behind for a while, but obviously it's all about results. And with the morning after the Wolves game, he surprised me. He Solskjaer has surprised me. I didn't expect him to make such a good start. I suppose we'll really see now how good he is, because he's had that little blip and they've lost a few games. So now we'll see if he can pull it out, finish in the top four, and do well against Barcelona. But I can't pretend. You know, and the Twitterer's record is there. That I thought it was an absurd decision. I was absolutely shocked.
Disappointment.
His appointment. Yeah, and I've been proven wrong so far.
But what I wonder is, I understand why there wasn't a natural why Ferguson had to step away. I understood that. So Moyes, it's his appointment. He wants him to do well on his own two feet. And then Van Gaal and Mourinho, even though they haven't had the length of success of Ferguson, but they are of the same stature in terms of the sort of footballing levels have achieved. So he wouldn't want to get involved there. But do you think, you might know this, Andy, do you think the board, after Mourinho didn't work, just turned to Ferguson and said, what do we do?
They got him back involved and they didn't use him enough post.
The board level.
Yeah, they didn't use him enough. He sat on a board, the football board, rather than the company board. And that board basically had no power at all. And you should be using the brains of Sir Alex Ferguson. Mm. And they're doing that more now. With David Moyes, from his perspective, you can't say no when Man United offer you the job. It just didn't work out.
Didn't he just tell him he had the job?
Yeah. Yeah,
he went round to his house and said, you're the new manager of Man United.
Yeah, he did.
I think the thing with Moyes was that I think Ferguson probably didn't realise how good he was. I think he thought he'd built this club. Everything was ticking over. The players were there. United just won the title by 12, 13 points. I don't think he realised how good he was, that you couldn't just get a manager who was used to finishing seventh and eighth in the Premier League. And I think there was a bit of romanticism to it. The Glaswegian, the Scottish, it's from the same, you know, the Shankly.
He saw himself in him.
Yeah, he saw himself in him, and he thought he's earned this. With 10 years at Everton, he's earned this, and he'll take it on. And the players are there, and I've built this. and you took Ferguson. I think, you know, Ferguson's got an ego, of course he has, after all he's achieved, but I don't think he realised quite how good he was. You couldn't just hand it to a top eight Premier League manager and continue, as was proved.
Okay, just very quickly to wrap this up on Manchester United. Is Ollie Andy going to sustain the upbeat success he's had at the start of his, well, through his temporary managership, now that he's the full-time manager?
It's going to be hard. Competition's much tougher than it was when for most of the time that Fergie was there. Manchester City have got an exceptional team. Chelsea have got money. Tottenham are very good as well. This is the best Liverpool team for a long time. And they've all got money. These rivals don't need to sell the best players. Manchester United used to go to Tottenham and buy Berbatov or Carrick. They don't need to sell them anymore. Leicester City didn't need to sell Harry Maguire to Manchester United because they don't need the money. Ollie needs support. He'll get money, but as has been shown among the wasteful signings Man United have made, you need more than that. You need good recruitment. You need a stronger structure. I think he's got a really difficult job. I like him. I think it's been brilliant since he's taken over. I think he's got a very difficult job.
In your piece, which is the cover story of the latest 442, you quote Gary Neville saying that Manchester United desperately need a proper director of football. Is that his application? Do you think Gary Neville would be good in that role?
I think he'd be very good in that role, but he wouldn't take that role.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just because he likes doing the media work?
He doesn't need the money. He's his own boss. He's got his own freedom, and he wouldn't take the role. And it's a shame.
I'm surprised at that, because I thought, with the respect he has of the fans, with his knowledge of the media, having had an unsuccessful but probably very educational spell as a manager, he would, and also as a businessman, he's got his property business, that he would suit it perfectly.
Yeah, he would.
Are you sure he doesn't want it?
Yeah.
I think that's bonkers. But Sam, who do you think that would be good for that role?
I think it might be someone who's already in the club, or somebody not high profile, really. I think that knows the structure and so on. I mean, you could bring in a figurehead like Gary Neville or someone, but I think it is needed. I think obviously they've swayed from one manager to the next. There needs to be some more continuity in there. You know, there was Monchi, obviously, who went. He's gone back to Sevilla now from Roma. He's the sort of the darling of the sporting directors. But maybe they need somebody just low-key. You know, you've got bigger figures at the club already with Solskjaer and Ferguson.
You're listening to the 442 podcast with me, James Brown, Andy Mitten and Sam Pilger. Now, Sam, in this 299th issue of 442, you have a fantastic piece with Kevin Keegan. I can say that, because I arrived as editor-in-chief 2 weeks in. I didn't commission it. So it's quite a nice position to be in. But it's a brilliant piece. Can you just tell us... well, first of all, I should explain why I think it's brilliant. It's so emotive. We were talking about Alex Ferguson there, and he's very open about what was perceived to be an emotional explosion or semi-breakdown or whatever you want to call that, that soundbite that he came out with at Elland Road many years ago. He talks really interestingly about that. And he's just a very honest, almost too honest in a way. You don't really hear football managers talking that emotionally about their careers. Give us a little bit background about how you set the interview up and how you got him to talk like that.
Well, it was a few months ago when he was promoting his autobiography. And rather than just a broad sweep of his career, we thought, what can we focus on and really... you know, go in depth on. The Newcastle years, the first Newcastle years, when he arrived back in 1992 until January 97, with the centrepiece, obviously the 95-96 season, when they were there, everybody's darlings, everybody wanted them to win the title. They played good football, interesting football, but obviously United had almost a better story with Cantona's return and overtook them. But Keegan, yeah, I mean, I've interviewed, you know, thousands of footballers and sports people and for more than 20 years. And Keegan is one of the most infectious, lovely characters and an absolute joy. You know, he bounded into the room. And I think for the first time ever, he said to me, "Oh, you're a United fan, aren't you?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, how'd you know that? Oh, I've been Googling you." And you don't really get that with interviewees. You know, you're just a, it's like you're the Sainsbury's checkout. They don't just go through a lot of the time. But Keegan, yeah, he'd looked into to that. Funnily enough,
it's interesting you say bounded in,
mm.
because reading it is almost a little bit like a therapy session. You've written it in the first person,
mm.
So if you've already got the magazine, it's not an extract from the book. This is Sammer's, but they're all his words. You've not ghost written it, have you?
So, yeah.
So you've just kind of tailored them into the first person. So that was interesting. He was an upbeat mood. So he was just being open. I mean, at times he sounded a bit depressed.
No, not. He was infectious. And you could see actually why players like playing for him and players love playing for him, because he was so enthusiastic and he was, you know, bouncy. And it was, this was at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Where did you interview him?
It was at a hotel in Leicester Square.
Okay, so it was a day of press.
It was a day of press. I think I was the first one, but the PR said that it had been an incredible time, because he wouldn't just, you know, sign and at book signings he'd talk. You know, someone would say, "Oh, I remember you from 25 years ago. My mum met you, and this and so on." He just wouldn't stop talking.
He loves football.
He loves it. Yeah.
Now, when we were talking about when we were planning on which features to focus on. And Steve, the producer, and I were talking about Keegan. We really got a sense of he should be involved in football. Mm. What is he doing at the moment? Did he talk about what his current role is in football? Has he got one?
No. He came back to Newcastle, didn't he? That well, but that was a long time ago. Now he's happy. I don't think he wants to come back into football. He does his talks. He says he does his talks to the sort of. Royal Nursing Federation, where he brings up the I would love it rant in 96, and says, you know, but says this is a sign of passion. So he goes around and does talks. But this is a guy who's quite happy to walk away from football, because when he finished playing, he went and lived in Spain for 4 years and didn't go to a single game. He went to one game in 4 years, lived in Marbella, Costa del Sol, and so he loves football, but he can walk away from it, and he's done it many times.
Andy, would you have him as the director of football at Manchester United?
No, but I like him. I went to interview him in 96 when he was at Newcastle, and when Sam's talking about his infectious personality, I saw that, and I always remember him saying that this is a football club, i.e. Newcastle United. Manchester United is an institution, and it was a sort of double-edged compliment, but he was very welcoming, and like Sam, I've interviewed hundreds of footballers, and he's one who stood out. And Peter Beardsley as well, actually, he was very good, but maybe not talk so much about him as Kevin Keegan.
The thing about Keegan is, the as a player, I mean, anybody under 30, maybe even under 35, won't have any memory of Keegan as a player. But I mean, he was the nearest player to compare him to, I would say, in recent decades, is David Beckham, in terms of the amount of attraction he had. He was the British superstar that followed George Best. And that's kind of overshadowed by a managerial career that we talk about, passion, exciting football, but not a great deal of success in terms of, he won loads of games at Fulham, won lots of games at Newcastle. He captured the imagination of non-club specific fans, you know, the broader footballing support. But it feels to me they're almost like two different people. The player who was totally successful, the manager who was perhaps more suited to a more naive period of time. As Shankly was.
Mm. Well, I mean, he came, you know, as I said, he came off literally off the beach 4 years in Spain.
Settled in Manchester now, lives in Manchester.
Yes, that's right, in Cheshire. Yeah, just outside. And he, his daughter thought he was a golfer, had no idea about his football career, because he just played golf and went to the beach, didn't see any football. And then got the call from Newcastle, and the fact that without any coaching badges or having even seen a game in the last 4 years, he went into Newcastle, who were looking like getting relegation to the third division, then the third tier. And turned it around and you know, took them a couple of points from winning the Premier League. I mean, it you know, not quite what Brian Clough did 2 decades earlier with Forest, who had the happy endings, but that coming in, taking a club from the lower reaches of the first, well, the old second division, and getting really close to winning the Premier League.
And he talks about why he thinks they didn't, which was interesting.
Yeah, he didn't use the word, but I mean, and it's a horrible word in sport, but they bottled it, really. They just didn't have the players. They seized up. They got scared. They did the hard bit. They put the points on the table, in January, obviously 12 points clear. Although they were 12 points clear, but he's always wanted to say that United had a game in hand. So
I'm not sure about this phrase, bottled it. I think about this a lot. At the moment, my club Leeds are 7 games away from a possible return to the top competition in world football. So the sense of excitement after being 15 years away is just immense. You're going into a Saturday and people are like tweeting the just how bad they feel. And you just feel great. You play the same teams twice. Everybody plays. It's like an experiment. You all are under exactly the same conditions. I know people might have better players or better managers or bigger supports or more money to invest, but you all play the same teams. Now, if you play a team when they're on a good run and then later somebody else plays them when they're on a poor run, that's just the random nature of it. When Leeds United won the last First Division title, Manchester United didn't bottle it. They just played the same amount of games. You know, you could play it and not know when anyone else scores. And I think you'd still play the same.
I'm not sure. I think it's the pressure. It's what on the line. I mean, you know, you can play good football in September and October. The season started. The sun's still out, and there's still points to play for, and it's the equal amount of points. But the season hasn't taken its shape. There's nothing to lose in a way. There's nothing to lose. When you come to March and April, you know, Fergie famously called it squeaky bum time. Then that is when players and Keegan in this season said looked at United, and United had won it in 93 and 94 and narrowly not won it in 95, and they had, you know, Pallister, Bruce, Cantona, Keane, Schmeichel. They had that experience. Newcastle had none of that, and so they had nothing to fall back on.
Yeah, go on, Andy.
Cheers for reminding us about 92, James, with Leeds winning it.
Yeah, but I don't think Man United bottled it. I just think you played the same teams as us.
The players would say,
and we did better against the other teams.
Yeah, you deserve to win it, no doubt. But you also get experienced in those situations.
That's
and you
true.
Become used to the pressure.
Yeah.
And back to Keegan, he was a world-class footballer. And he was a very, very good manager. He just wasn't the best manager. But what he did at Newcastle, he put a massive buzz into that club and into that city. And revived a team who, at the start of the 90s, were really on their uppers. I can remember him at Southampton. I know he'd obviously been at his peak at Liverpool and in Germany.
Is this as a player?
Yeah, my uncle took him on tour to Malaysia and came back with a picture of Kevin Keegan sat on a donkey with his autograph and also the autograph of Sir Matt Busby. So I took them both into school because if you had something interesting, you could hand it to the headmaster and he'd say, this is what this student has brought him. And I thought, there you go, Kevin Keegan, Matt Busby. And he stood up and he said, this is the autograph of Busby off the BT advert. No, I'm just dying of embarrassment there that, you know, this great figure, Matt Busby, I've somehow got his autograph. And, you know, remember Busby off the British telephone advert, the little yellow bird or whatever. But Keegan's life has been a big success. And football written history will remember him exceptionally well and rightly so.
This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.
I'm Captain Obvious, and every day people book trips on Hotels.com that you will later hate like. A hate like is when you like Becky's picture of another waterfall even though you kind of hate it because she's there and you're on the train next to a mouth breather. Don't hate like Becky's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get a reward night on thousands of properties. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, get rewarded.
Excludes package bookings and bookings using discount codes. Eligible hotels only. Reward night worth average price of previous 10. Taxes and fees payable. 18 plus. Rewards members only. See website for T's and C's.
You're listening to the 442 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe through iTunes and Spotify. very much a podcast of three Uniteds here. We've discussed Newcastle United and Manchester United. Now we're moving on to, unsurprisingly, Leeds United. Andy, you've spent a lot of time covering Spanish football. And I know that you are friends or you're associates with the talismanic player that we have at Leeds at the moment.
Pablo Hernandez?
Correct.
I got invited to interview him in 2011. He'd been man of the match against Manchester United and he knew his agent.
Yeah.
So I went down to Valencia and had a perfectly nice chat with him. And he probably wanted to do the interview because he wanted to play in England, maybe, where there was more money. And I know he ended up going to Swansea. Interview was fine, really liked him, followed his career from there on in. Could never say I was mates with him. But what I remember from that day was walking into a civil war, because Unai Emery was manager of Valencia. And okay. I walked in as this sort of wide-eyed English journalist, not knowing that he was at war with all the Valencian media, which happens most weeks in Valencia.
Okay.
And I sort of asked him an innocent question, next week you're playing Chelsea, and he just snapped back at me. And I just thought, what a knob. You know, I've gone down there to the training ground. I'm being polite. I'm writing for big outlets, and I'm asking you an innocent question, and then I got an apology. Sorry about that. There's just a lot of tension in the air at the moment. So maybe Gary Neville should have heeded that warning. But Valencia was always like that. Hernandez was a good player. He wasn't the top Ruben Baraja style David Villa, David Silva Valencian. But I'm really impressed that he's still doing it at Leeds. And how old is he now? 32?
He's being compared to what Strachan did. His performances are
stop bringing up 92.
No, but,
we didn't do it at Man United, did he? He did it at Elland Road.
The reason we're talking about Bielsa and Leeds United isn't just because I support them and that we're doing well, but we have a fantastic second managerial orientated piece in issue 299 of 442 after Andy's Ole Solskjaer piece. And that is A Year with Bielsa by Phil Hay. And Phil is the leading sports writer on the Yorkshire Evening Post. And I think in days gone by, when national newspapers had a lot more money, he'd have been snapped up and whisked away to London a long time ago. As a fan, it's great to have such brilliant writing on your local team in the local paper. And because Bielsa doesn't do one-on-ones, I asked Phil, you've spent 2 or 3 hours a week in a room with him. Can you just write about what that year's been like? And it's a fascinating insight, and in much in the same way as your piece, Andy, is full of different voices, giving us the inside track on what it's like around Manchester United. Phil's insights into being with Bielsa, rather than just the things he's saying, are fascinating. So along the lines of, he was driving out of Thorpe Arch to the training ground one day, and he saw Bielsa just walking along the road with a rucksack, and he pulled over and said, "Do you want a lift?" He said, no, I like walking.
He's a genius.
You imagine? Can you imagine like another
where
manager doing
to?
It? He was walking to the nearby
Derby's
town, town of he was walking to Wetherby, where he's living. And but he was again. You know him from Bilbao.
His Bilbao team were fantastic, and I spoke a lot about him even before. A lot of British people never heard of him. I remember a pretty famous TV, a radio commentator is saying, "Bielsa, who?" I thought, that's really embarrassing. You should know who he is. This guy, he's a genius. I love the style of football. I love the fact that when they were leading at Old Trafford, Ander Herrera went to the side of the pitch and said, "Do you want us to close the game now?" He said, no, continue to attack. This is Athletic Club Bilbao away at Manchester United, battered Manchester United. He's a star. I went to Rosario, the city where he's from, last year.
It's just worth saying, is also the hometown of Che Guevara and Messi.
Yeah.
To me, that's where he sits, right in the middle of those two.
Yeah, I went to the derby there, and 3 days before the derby, they changed the date of the derby, so I didn't get to see the derby there.
Ah, okay.
But I went to the Newell's Old Boys Stadium, named after Bielsa now, and he's a character. He adds to football, like Keegan does, and I loved it when he came here, and he even went over to Elland Road. Yeah, I went over in September to watch him play Brentford and just watched him. He fascinates me. I want him in the Premier League.
He's not like any other manager I've ever come across. And when he first arrived, they were using his old nickname of El Loco. He's not a madman. He just does the job to such an extent. His knowledge of the players, his knowledge of the opposition, his understanding of how to control a game. He's just a really smart guy. And his family are academics.
He's an obsessive.
he seems to have ridden out the Spygate scandal rather well as well. And I think that was sort of overhyped because I thought, well, good on you, mate. You know, he's trying to go the extra mile and, he's not doing anything illegal. So I thought that was a very, English etiquette was upset, but too bad. He wants to win games.
It was largely a load of second-rate players who'd all failed in management, moaning about it on the radio, basically. You know, if you think that clubs that are found guilty of having racist chants at the grounds get fined, 15,000-25,000 for Leeds to be fined 200,000 for an intern stroke scout stood on a path looking through a fence,
not doing anything illegal. Yeah,
so I mean, it was a distraction, and I guess Leeds just coughed that money up, A, because they could afford it, and B, because they didn't want anything else. You know, the danger of having points like Birmingham City have just had. It's something Phil mentions in the article is that, I mean, Leeds have paid a lot of money. If we don't go up, I imagine there will be a few first team names heading off, maybe a Calvin Phillips or Panthers Jansen or Kemar Roof, you know, the players that you'd reach that would get somewhere between £5 and £10 million for.
Leeds are planning three different scenarios right now for next season. Premier League with Bielsa, Championship, or life without Bielsa. So the way your club has got a structure for next season in terms of their recruitment, three massively different scenarios.
Well, Phil does say in the piece that Leeds announced it as a 2-year deal, but actually he spoke to people very close to him back in South America, and they said it's a 2-year deal if you get promoted. So this next 7 weeks, next 7 games, very, very exciting, tense period. But it's just, as a fan, you can't do anything. You can only watch and enjoy it. So it's my mates are saying, why aren't you all wound up? Because we've been here. We've been here like a couple of years ago under Gary Monk. I wouldn't let myself think we were going to get even in the playoffs until this week, the first week of April. And then, we had a really bad last 6 weeks. And
so what does your instinct tell you this season then?
I think we'll go up. There have been games where the players have just dug in and got on and followed what Bielsa said. There was a last-minute equaliser against Middlesbrough from Calvin Phillips. There were two televised games at Christmas where we won in extra time. That's not fluke. That's intensity and ability. Pablo Hernandez is like how he wasn't in the EFL player team of the year. It's just bizarre. His stats are amazing. As Andy said, he's a guy who's getting on, but he's scoring goals like a young striker. He's been involved in more goals, I think, than any other midfield player in the Championship. And so that is my gut instinct. I think the only team to worry about is if we didn't make automatic would be Aston Villa. Have come on a really strong run into the playoffs.
They've got to go up, Villa. The way their finances are structured. If they don't, I think they're going to have
Aston Villa
real
or Leeds
problems. Villa.
Yeah. I think they both have.
Yeah.
And that's not going to work.
It's a great league, that Championship. I looked at the average attendances at the weekend. 25,000 in England's second tier. It's incredible.
Well, I compare it to... I don't drink beer, okay? But when I see the sort of the fuss around craft beer about authenticity and personality, that's what it's like being in the Championship. And, it's one of the reasons I went straight in and did a huge piece on Leeds in this issue of 442, while we're talking about it. I felt the same when Newcastle were in the second tier. There are lots of really big clubs at that level. Clubs who've won European Cups.
Have Leeds won the European Cup, James?
I was thinking more of a team like Aston Villa.
Because I've spoken to some Leeds fans who say they have.
No, we have won European Cups. Not the European Cup, but we've won European trophies. But whether you're looking at teams that have recently been promoted like Newcastle and Wolves, or demoted like Sunderland, relegated like Sunderland, Leeds, Aston Villa, Ipswich, Nottingham Forest. These are clubs that don't slip down to 7,000-8,000 attendances.
The crowd's incredible.
They support the teams, whatever, and it's genuinely a great division. There's a lot. Wolves were brilliant last year. It doesn't surprise me at all that Wolves are seventh. Next year, Wolves will be in the top six. They've got the money. They've got the people behind them. They've got a very good manager. And I actually think if we came up, that Bielsa, if he sticks around, Leeds will do well because of the quality of football we play. My fear was when Mourinho went, that Manchester United will go, he's doing a great job with kids there. And the same at Chelsea. Chelsea have got that band now. They've got all those great kids that have been, that, you know, not really getting a game. And in the Herrera interview we had 2 issues ago, he was saying, I would love to see Bielsa in the Premier League, but not going as far as saying with Leeds. He said, at any club.
You just got to be careful there, hasn't it? With the Championship, I know there's money tends to buy you a higher place up the league, but Preston North End are 10th. And they've got a tiny budget. Brentford, who I saw at Elland Road, they play great football. They're
Brentford
averaging
really
10,000. But Huddersfield Town came up. It's amazing. Huddersfield Town were promoted to the Premier League. You know, it's become the norm now. That shouldn't have happened.
Every year, the likes of Stoke come down. Swansea come down. And people
where are they now? 15th and 16th?
Yeah, people who don't know this league instantly say, all the bookies and the pundits say, the teams that get relegated will come back up. It just doesn't work like that. Wolves, Sheffield United, both by far the best teams I saw last year in terms of teams. Huddersfield Town had a couple of really good loanees. I think that's a key factor of, you know, can you borrow decent players? Derby have got a couple at the moment. Leeds don't have that, you know. They're all our own players. We had one game this year where the whole bench was 5 under-21s. He's played something like 6 or 7 kids, and they've contributed. They're really good players. So it's an exciting time, I guess, for my club. We've talked about the calibre of the history of the Championship clubs there. In the latest issue of 442, we also have the list of the 51 best EFL players. And something that struck me is the last England team that was put out, there were 6 players in that team who've come through the divisions. From clubs at lower levels, you know, the Maguires, Pickfords, Rose, a player that should still be in around England but isn't, is Vardy, is the poster boy for coming from lower leagues. Does it strike you, Sam, that clubs, the top end clubs, are missing out on a whole sea of quality players that just aren't being given the chance?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And one name you missed there, which you talk about poster boys, is Dele Alli.
Yeah, of course. I think there's 7 of them. I think we counted 7 who played in that last England game.
So, you know, he didn't come through the academies. I did a piece on Dele Alli's MK Don years for another outlet and spoke to 4 or 5 people from MK Dons who had played with him. And he was playing regularly at a young age and getting that experience. And, you know, Tottenham and England are now feeling the benefit of that. I think, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously you can get bargains. I mean, Tottenham paid $5 million for Dele Alli, and you know, what's he worth now in the silly market? 80, 90, 100 million. So it's strange that people don't take more of a risk there, because if you can spend 5-10 million and get that back 5 times, why wouldn't you?
So England are very much boasting players that have established themselves at larger clubs, but having started out at smaller clubs, there are less academy players in, you know, there are less top academy players in the national team at the moment, in the English national team, than there are teams that the players that have made their way through the levels. And if you want to know who 442 consider to be the 50 best, it was 50. When I arrived, and you should always have an odd number because it makes people curious. But I couldn't, like all of these things, you can't believe that certain people are or aren't in. And I added the editor's choice. My choice was Luke Freeman, who is a sort of attacking midfielder at QPR. And he was brilliant. He took Leeds apart 3-4 weeks ago. But your favourite, if you support a lower league team, there's a good chance that one of your players in there, whether it's MK Dons, Fleetwood, Norwich, QPR, Mansfield, wherever, they're all in there. You've been listening to the first 442 podcast with myself, James Brown, and very special guests, 2 great writers who both got brilliant pieces in this current issue. Sam Pilcher, who's written the Keegan piece. Thank you, Sam. And Andy Mitten, our editor-at-large, who's written a fantastic cover story with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.